Sometimes you feel like you know everything. Then let's do
The conference committee will come to order. I think we're going to start with just a quick introduction around the room so we know who we're calling on. Just so I can know who we're calling on. If you want to start back this side. And if anyone knows where Representative Burns is, we can get him in the room. Do you want to start with introduction?
Mark Nicely, House Republican Research.
Eileen Shore, DFL, House DFL Democrat Research.
Representative Aaron Peterson.
Bobby with House Research.
Andy Pomeroy, CA for the Energy Committee.
Kate Knudsen. Senator Ellen Anderson, St. Paul.
Carolyn Doyle, Senate Counsel.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Jenny Fredrickson, member of the Senate.
Mary Kubley, member of the Senate.
Darlene Sliwa, Senate Counsel and Research. I staff the Senate Energy Committee.
Allison Pinebrook, Senator Anderson's LA.
Ed Warner, Senate Republican Research.
Andrew Boone, Senate DFL Research.
Don Jarowski, Committee Administrator for the Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division.
Madam Chair, I can see the advantage of the House nameplates. They have names on both sides.
Yes.
I'm not sure we haven't figured that out yet. So you can see them in the fine print sometimes, but
Okay. Well, basically, today what we want to do, what we want to accomplish is going through the side-by-side language, and we'll have House staff, House nonpartisan staff leading that, and then talk through some of the compromises that Senator Anderson and the conferees and I have talked about, and then possibly recessing or coming back again in the next day or two to adopt the actual language. So, Bob, if you could just kind of do a quick run through.
Sure. Both bodies agreed that this action was cited as the Resolutions Act of 2018 to start. The House language includes some intent language and the legislature to participate in the Midwest Cabin Trade Program. Both bodies reference the Midwest Greenhouse Gas Accord requiring that the Commissioner of Commerce submit a report to the legislature describing the status of development of model rule by that body, and also whether or not the Midwestern Greenhouse Gas Accord will operate in a time frame to allow Minnesota to achieve the goals that were enacted by the legislature last session for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. The Senate has some additional language that must be in that report, talking about the implementation mechanisms that are in the model rule adopted by the Midwest Greenhouse Gas Accord, and also requires an evaluation of legislation that are pending in Congress with respect to a federal cap and trade program and how a regional program might impact that. Both bodies have language stating that the model rule in accord with the state's emissions reduction goal does not get ready. The report also contained options for the state in terms of joining another regional cap and trade group or possibly implementing the cap and trade program here in Minnesota alone.
Madam Chair?
Senator,
I have a question all the way back on the section there.
Mm-hmm.
The House codified this language and the Senate did not. Which are we going to do? Are we going to write this into the statutes or keep it a session law?
Senator Anderson, I'm not sure what that means on the Senate side of what
we did. We just made it a title that wouldn't last beyond this session, that wouldn't be part of the statute books.
Okay.
So I think that would probably be preferable, but we can go back and forth about all the different items, but we, you know, we could use the title again if we don't have another bill.
Resolutions Act of 2009.
That's right.
Okay. Oh. Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. I think that'll be a discussion point when we move forward on the compromise language.
Turning to page R2, both bodies make provisions for appointment of an advisory group to the stakeholders who are working on the regional cap and trade program with the Midwestern Governors Association. Both bodies have six legislators. The House, and this was an amendment that was made on the floor, also requires two representatives from not energy-related business community and three representatives from organized labor to also serve in that advisory role. And the House also broadens the subjects which the advisory group can advise that group on beyond the accord to other energy issues that are being examined by the Western Governors Association. About in the middle of the page, both bodies have provision that any cap and trade agreements entered into are not effective in Minnesota until, in the House's language, approved by the legislature, and in the Senate language, until enacted into law. Also in the middle of the page on the House side, Section 4, Post-Implementation Cost Study, I believe this was also added during the floor debate. It requires that 1 year after the initial implementation of a statewide cap and trade program, and each year following, the Department of Commerce submits a study to the legislature estimating the annual economic cost and benefits to Minnesota consumers and businesses from that implementation.
Madam Chair, are you looking for comments as we go through this on each section?
I think we'll go through it and then make some general comments after we're done with the side-by-side.
Much of the rest of the bills in both bodies are directed at a number of studies that are commissioned. On page R2, the first one is called a governance study, which essentially would require examining how decisions would be made regarding the expenditures of potential revenues that would accrue to the state from sale of allowances under a cap and trade program. The language here is very similar. It talks about looking at the role of the legislature, citizens, technical experts, and state agencies, and also directs that the University of Minnesota, which is instructed to do the study, look at innovative decision-making structures and processes, both in Minnesota and elsewhere, that might offer some useful models to consider. A second study that both bodies have in the language on page R3 is generally an economic impact report of what implementation of the cap and trade program in Minnesota would mean to not only to entities that are covered under the cap, but businesses in general, energy costs, households, families, et cetera, et cetera. There are some differences in language here that I'm sure we'll look at in greater detail. Another study, and this is also on page R3 for the Senate language, again, is of potential cap and trade revenues. This is the Commissioner of Commerce and the Control Agency submit these to the legislature, looking at projections of revenues that may accrue as a result of those sales of allowances. Looking at other economic impacts that can be reduced through by using those revenues, by directing them to certain places, to reduce economic cost to industries and households, to stimulate economic activity, reducing the amount of money that leaves the state to pay for fossil fuels and other goals. And that the provisions to be included in those studies extend on the page R4. Again, there's generally similar ideas here in different language, and some also some substantive differences. For example, the House language in the middle of the page includes analyzing the effect of the cap and trade program on the level of foreign investment in Minnesota. Again, I think that was something that was added on the floor. Down at the bottom of the page, another study called Expenditures to be Studied requires how using the potential revenues that accrue to the state could be spent. And it lists a number of categories, direct per capita rebates to state citizens, grants and incentives to consumers to invest in efficient energy or renewable energy sources, financial assistance to businesses that install technologies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's basically looking for options of how any revenue that accrues to the state can be spent to achieve largely the same goals, also to mitigate any economic impacts of implementing the cap and trade study. On page R5, there are, towards the top of the page, what's called study criteria, specifically asks to determine the extent to which expenditures on those earlier kinds of measures assist Minnesota's transition to a low greenhouse gas emitting economy, and essentially sets out a number of conditions that can be met. Do these expenditures produce cost-effective emissions reductions, increase sustainable development, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, reduce disruptive impacts? So it gives some guidance to decision makers in terms of how different spending options can affect these important variables. The appropriations sections would appropriate up to $500,000 for these studies, a portion which may be transferred to the University of Minnesota for that governance study we talked about earlier. And that's a summary of the sidebar tonight.
Yeah, thanks. I think if we wanted to walk through some of the main differences, and if members of the conference committee have any comments as well. I mean, I think it's pretty clear the legislative intent language on the House side is, you know, we did have a vote on the floor to keep that in, and I think that was that's a major difference. The dates in terms of when these studies are due, the kind of weight that the two studies are given, between the economic emission study as well as the possible revenue study. And then on the House side, the post-implementation cost study, we did get a fiscal note on this, and the fiscal note was zero, but in the notes it basically said the Department of Commerce doesn't know how to price this. They don't know how much it would cost. So while it says zero, it's basically because they don't really know how to price it. So if we could get more comments on that, that would be great. But that was what I had read in the fiscal note on the House language. There's a couple of detail things, I think, that are hugely substantively different, but those are basically the differences I see. If you have any comments, Senator Anderson.
Yeah, can we call on Mr. Mueller?
Yeah.
I think
Madam Chair and members, I just want to point out one thing with the appropriation. In the big budget conference committee, they did adopt some language that's similar to both sides in the House and Senate. So there is language in that bill that we should probably keep in mind, depending on what final language is adopted here, and maybe get that changed over there so it's the same. Because what was adopted in House File 1812, the big budget bill, doesn't make any mention of the University of Minnesota portion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's silent on that. It just says $500,000 appropriated to Commerce for the cap and trade studies, and sort of leaves it at that. So whatever we adopt here should maybe see if we can get it into the other bill or dropped out of the other bill and just stay in this bill. So just want to make that note.
Okay. And I had lost track, Madam Chair, I'd lost track of that. So that's a good point. If we can still make that change, that would be good. Just a couple of comments. You know, the bills are really quite similar. You mentioned the intent language, and I like your intent language. I think it creates a little bit of clarity about why we're doing this and that it's important, but it's also true that the Senate is frowns upon intent language and tends to take it out of every bill regardless of how good it is, because it just, you know, it's seen as not really operational or meaningful language. And if we intend to do something, then we ought to say that we're going to do it rather than just say we intend to do something. So that's an issue, I know, for the Senate. The study language that's in the Senate, in some ways, it's a little confusing how it's set up, these different studies and how they relate to each other. But in the Senate, the language for all of the studies was negotiated out through representatives of stakeholder groups represented by Bill Grant of the Isaac Walton League and Mike Robertson of the Chamber of Commerce. And so that's important to keep in mind, that we did have agreement on the language of the study on the Senate side, and I don't believe you had any kind of a negotiation on your language. So that's something that is significant to us. One specific point I wanted to mention is that we require the Midwest Governors Association to do these studies, and there's been conversations with their representatives, and it looks like that would work out really, really well. I think both of us intended that it would be a contract study. It wouldn't be done by the Department of Commerce, but we've worked out an agreement that it would be done because the MGA is already going to be doing similar analyses of the whole Midwest region, and it would make sense for them to do this, the Minnesota version of that, at the same time. And so I think that's a good provision on the Senate side, is to specifically allocate that to go through the MGA. I don't know if there's other differences I would point out. That's pretty much it. I don't have anything else that jumps out at me.
Madam Chair, one other thing I should mention, looking at the economic impact study, page R3, the paragraph at the top of the Senate language on the right-hand side, it mentions that the analysis will be done of the proposed model regional cap and trade rule. Mm-hmm. The Senate language is, the House language is just kind of generic. It talks about studying the impact of the cap and trade program. Given my understanding that the model rule is not scheduled for completion until the end of November, and our reports are due at the beginning of next year in order to help the legislature make decisions during next session, that's a question we'll have to do.
Thank you. Do any of the conferees have any comments about what we've gone over?
Madam Chair, I have a question. Difference on page 2. Line 213 and the policy 219 in the Senate, the House has the cap and trade, mm-hmm. cap and trade agreements approved by the legislature, and in the Senate we have been enacted into law. Is that what you intended to have put into law?
In the House language, that was actually amended to read approved by the legislature, because I think a big point of this bill is that the legislature should be involved as we go forward with the Midwest cap and trade program. And it wasn't always clear with enacted into law whether or not that meant the legislature should be involved. So we're trying to clarify that with the House language.
Madam Chair, I don't know how it could be interpreted any other way if we're enacting the law. Be a bill that passes the House and the Senate, yeah. and signed by the governor.
I'd had comments from some of the department folks saying they could imagine a scenario in which this could just happen through rulemaking, and therefore I wanted to make it more explicit with legislative involvement in the process.
Madam Chair, I would say I think we had the exact same intention in that regard, that we wanted to make sure that something this important had legislative discussion and approval through the legislative process before it would take effect, and it couldn't just be done through rulemaking. And I guess the only question is, I think we share the intention. The only question is which language gets us there. And I think you're right, Senator Frederickson, that only legislatures can enact, you know, regulatory agencies promulgate rules and we enact things into law, but I understand the House was trying to get at the same intention by their language.
Corollary to that, we don't have a post-implementation cost study.
Yep.
You know, it would seem to me that that would come after there is a cap and trade in place. And that could be part of what gets enacted into law. If we do go into a cap and trade and it's enacted into law, that would require probably multiple studies to be reported back to us.
Senator Craig?
I guess I think the post implementation study is a little premature at this point.
We had lots, I think the House was thinking this is just going to happen. We had lots of post implementation amendments offered, and this is the one that went on. And so, you know, the House apparently assumes this is going to happen, and I hope they're right. and this one went on, and I guess the biggest concern is if we could get some comments from the department about the cost of this, because we're spending up to $500,000 on similar studies, and to do that yearly might be.
Madam Chair, was it the optimist or the paranoid to put?
Good question. Maybe it made them both happy, Ms. Senator Frederickson.
Senator Cooper.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a couple of comments, and maybe it's just the way I read it, but you know, there seems to be some implied understandings here. I mean, if we're going to have, you know, an economic study of the impact of cap and trade, that seems to be assumed by whoever wrote the language that it's going to be a negative impact. I mean, if we think there's going to be a negative impact of cap and trade, you know, shouldn't we also, I mean, you know, like on the first page on 123 on the Senate language, an economic impact study under paragraph D. Well, okay, but, you know, shouldn't we also do an economic impact of failing to do a cap and trade thing? I mean, you know, it seems to me that there's a balance side here that's missing. You know, and on the House language on line 311 through 313, it talks about how to avoid regressive impacts. Well, how about, you know, accessing progressive impacts? I mean, you know, there's a balance side that is, it seems to be missing in this whole study language. You know, just the way I perceive it, I mean, it just seems to me that there is an implied assumption in the language, even though, you know, I think the other side is there when it says, you know, that we should assess costs and benefits. You know, but the implied assumption seems to be that there will be costs, but there is no equal assumption that assumes there will be benefits. So I don't think we can change the language at this point, Madam Chair, but I wanted to get my nickel worth in.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. And we've gone through and tried to make it more neutral, not assuming costs or benefits. And I think one of the major ways to do that, and this is a difference between the House and Senate language, is we have the economic impact study and we have the potential revenue study. And I think the people who really have studied a cap and trade program and have been advocating this now, Senator Anderson and I have come a long way from when we started. The allowances in that revenue and how that's invested and returned to citizens, it could actually become very progressive if it's done in a certain way. And the House side, those two studies are given equal weight. And on the Senate side, one is included in the report to the legislature and one is not. They're the same date, so that's important. But I think those two studies are really, in order to look at the whole picture of a cap and trade program, those two studies really should be given equal weight in this report back to the legislature. And that is a difference as well. And I think it gets to the point you're making in terms of not assuming one way or the other.
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, I think you make a very good point, and I would just say, in addition to what Representative Knuth said, that, you know, obviously this bill did a lot, went further when it was first introduced, although we did initially in our first draft, we did have some form of cost-benefit study in our bill. But I think, as Senator Frederickson mentioned, the pessimists and the optimists, and I think the pessimists maybe had a little more, they had a lot of concern about the direction we were heading, about the assumption that we should move forward with a cap and trade. And so what we ended up with was language that I think is, it does weigh on the side of trying to answer a lot of the questions that a lot of people who are very skeptical that it's a good idea have. And so in the end, it was clear that people who were skeptical about whether we should ever do a cap and trade or whether it'd be good for Minnesota supported this bill, a lot of them, because they wanted to get information, more information. And I guess I always, even though you may be right that it's weighed in, it looks like it may bring out some of the negatives, I think it's important to also, this study needs to come back with an equally valid set of facts and information about the positives that we could accomplish for our state economically, environmentally, health-wise by doing a cap and trade. And so I hope that it does. But I also think that having more information and more answers is always the best thing we can do to try to help us move forward and try to help bring some of those skeptics along. if we have, you know, if we can successfully answer some of those questions.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I guess one of you made the comment about the department didn't know how to put a value, a dollar value on some of the costs that were talked about, and I assume that that would also be true on the other side, that, you know, they wouldn't know how to assess costs on either side of that. But I think if both of them aren't included in the study, we're going to end up with a lot of information on one side and not as much on the other, and it might impact the final outcome as well. So.
Senator Cooley, the comment I made about it was not about the cost was not about the cost of the cap and trade program. It was about the cost of actually how much it would cost to do a post-implementation study every year. And it was put at zero, but in the notes, the assumption was that the department wasn't sure how to estimate that.
Okay.
And that's what I was referring to, not the possible benefits of a cap-and-trade program moving forward.
And, you know, Madam Chair, Senator Cooley, without getting too philosophical here, given that the time is slipping away here, I think we do face the challenge that it's always harder to quantify environmental benefits and health benefits, especially when you're talking about global factors like climate change and global warming. And so it will be a challenge to have, you know, to have a chart that says here's how much it'll save us and benefit us, and here's how much it'll cost us. It's hard to do that when you're talking about, you know, the future of our wildlife populations and our lakes and our quality of life. I mean, it's really hard to measure those things. So I hope that we can have some valuable information, though, that will help lead us forward.
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, I think that's true, but I also think it points out the need to work toward a system of doing our economics that allows for the inclusion of values other than dollar values.
Senator Cooley, I would agree with you, and I think that's what a cap and trade program is trying to do. It's bringing the value of pollution in terms of it does have a negative impact on wildlife, the atmosphere, the climate, and putting that value into a dollar form, which is what our economic system currently recognizes most easily. And that's, I think, a very valuable part of the cap and trade program. I don't think you're going to get arguments from us on that particular issue. So,
do you want to ask any questions? Did you want to ask?
Well, if Mr. Garvey, if I could ask a couple. It's mainly about the, I talked about the post-implementation cost study. And if you, I know on the fiscal, and I don't have a copy of the fiscal note here, but it came back as zero, but with the assumption that the department didn't know how to quantify that cost. Do you have any sense of how much this would be to do it well, and framing that, and we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to figure out the cap and trade program and get it right from the beginning. And speaking from, it's easier to quantify the dollars, and it's easier to quantify some of those sorts of things, where it's not as easy to quantify some of the environmental benefits, the health benefits, the renewable energy investment benefits that may not be as clear unless you have a really thorough econometric economic study. So I guess my concern would be doing this through department resources, we might not get the full information. If you could just comment about that particular provision.
Madam Chair, members of the conference, Edward Garvey, Office of Energy Security Director and Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. You've accurately reflected what's in our fiscal note on this, and you've also sort of, to some extent, touched on some of the difficult components of the analysis that went into it. Doing an annual economic assessment study of the costs slash benefits, however you want to sort of define that, of something as significant as a cap-and-trade program, which has the potential implications of it touching every Minnesotan in many, many different countless ways, has the potential of being a very, very complicated endeavor. It's an endeavor that we're asking the Midwest Governors Association, their consultants, to do, and we're potentially giving them hundreds of thousands of dollars on top of what they're already going to do in order to get it done. to ask us to do that on an annual basis, we're sitting there sort of saying it's either something that we sort of take on rote in a software model program from the Midwest governors that we don't know whether we'd be able to get and whether we'd be able to duplicate and have the analytical capability of doing it. It's something that we either sort of maybe be run through models that we already have or don't have or working with some of the other state agencies, but you're not sure. Or it's something that you have to contract out. And in which case you're talking about, again, tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So our conclusion was rather than basically try to sort of roll and try to do all those scenarios, basically say, we'll do the best we can with what we can, what we have and what those resources are. And you, or we'd have to write a fiscal note with an open-ended dollar amount, I mean, which I thought wasn't really constructive and it wouldn't be sort of, I'd be answering it from the different, I'd be answering and defending that number from a different side. So that's why we sort of said zero fiscal note because we'll try to do what we can working within the Pollution Control Agency and the other state agencies, but you'll get what we can, what we can do with that.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. And I guess my concern with that is, do we get balanced information or kind of stuff that, with the way we've been doing our accounting and our economics without a cap and trade, basically going towards the status quo of not having done this. So I appreciate your comments on that. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to ask Deputy Commissioner Garvey about the studies and the dates that we have, because we have... The Senate has a later date, February 15th, and the House has a January 15th. And the Chair and I have had some conversations about this, and I know the House would really feel strongly about trying to do this quicker. And I wonder, I'm not sure who had the conversation with the Midwest Governors Association about doing this study. Was that you or was that someone else? Mr. Grant?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Garvey.
Senator Anderson, members of the conference, I've been... in the communication with the Midwest Governors Association.
Okay. Well, can you tell us whether that would be a problem to have the studies that we're asking them to do come back by January 15th?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, members of the conference, the goal of the Midwest Governors Association's effort and the commitment of the accord is to put together a model rule by November of this year. The Midwest Governors Association has retained three substantive consultants: the Pew Center for Global Climate Change, the World Resources Institute, Center for Climate Strategies, as well as the Great Plains Institute to provide overall administrative support. The concept that we were doing is we assume that a lot of the analysis that's being asked for, particularly in the economic impact study, but as well as perhaps some of the components that are also being asked in the revenues and how allowances may be done in the ordinary course of the analysis and preparation by the consultants, by the Midwest Governors Association, and the stakeholder groups. So ideally, we'll have a lot of that done, and it'll be handled without any expenditures of dollars from us. The question in our minds was, and this is how we structured it, is if it's not done to the satisfaction that we want, to the granularity or the robustness or the specificity of Minnesota, or to taking account of Minnesota's unique industries and impacts, et cetera, we'll want to have the analysts make additional subsequent runs. And candidly, I don't know at this point, and I'm not going to know for several months, what that timing is going to be, and whether they can run those concurrently, and so it lines up with the November / timetable, or whether you wait till the rule is all done, and then they have to rerun them. And I don't know how long those are going to run. And so what we sort of figured, and I'll just also explain in the context of this discussion, we were having discussions in other settings and other hearings, and there were the date selections of some of the committees and some members that had wait until February, and they were putting February dates in there. So we just sort of started adopting those dates because those were the ones that were being proposed by some of the members. And I think, Senator Anderson, there were some of those committees on some of the other bills. Remember those dates? There was a lot of debate on dates. And so there was nothing sort of dramatically sacred about the February 15th date from our end. We just wanted to give us the consultants enough time to do their work after the November deadline. But at the same time, we wanted to give them enough time to make it work.
Did I? Thank you, Madam Chair. Where you started, I have a question about, because it sounded like what you said is that these consulting groups will be, I mean, we know that they're going to be doing modeling on the whole Midwest region in terms of, you know, they'll be doing similar analysis of what we're asking for the Midwest region, and that's why we thought it made sense to piggyback on that. But I think what I heard you say is that after we see what the results are of their analysis for the whole region, if it doesn't fit Minnesota, we'll have them run it again. Is that what I heard you say? Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, members of the conference committee, we're assuming that this kind of data and this kind of analysis will most, if not all, the other states will want to have done. So yes, the consultants are going to be running region-wide analysis, but we also assume that they will also be making runs and doing analysis on sort of state impact. So each governor will have the ability to go back and sort of say, here's how it affects our state. What we don't know is whether or not they will basically do those runs to our satisfaction to meet all the answers that we in Minnesota specifically want, particularly the provisions.
I thought that was the whole purpose of appropriating this money. I mean, it's a lot of money to spend to try to get results that we want. So don't you think it's possible for us to sort of go to them up front and say, we're going to give you extra money to make sure that you do a detailed analysis of Minnesota? And I don't know if any of the other states will put that level of commitment into this that we are. But
the critical phrase in the drafting is it's up to. Mm-hmm. Because we don't know how much this will take. It may be that they do it all. It may be only they have to do a couple runs, and that's only $50,000. It's not basically rewriting a check for $500,000 and say, here. At the same time, members of the conference committee, this legislation has been going through the process, and at the same time, the consultants and the stakeholders in the Midwest Governors Association are starting to organize themselves. And so what we were trying to work to make sure is that we could sort of line these up both at the beginning and at the end. So we have the information, you have the information that we want, particularly on the economic impacts analysis.
Mr. Garvey, I would also add the cap and trade potential revenue study. I mean, I think it's very important that those are considered concurrently and on the same level to get at, particularly the point Senator Kubley has made, that we don't want to assume only negative impacts, and I think the optioning and potential uses of that really can add significant benefits to a cap and trade program. And so moving forward, I think we need to talk about those in the same breath. And so what I'm hearing you say is that you'll use up to a certain amount of this appropriation, and it's money that's already been appropriated for renewable energy research. That's what the pot of money that we're using to do this. And just to be clear, I think from the committee and the legislature side is to use what you need to get this done to the extent and to the level of quality that we're asking for in this bill. Just to be clear, we like renewable energy research, but a concrete program done well will positively impact the economy, the community, and renewable energy research and implementation, I think, down the line. So we just want to be clear on that point as well. Do you have any other questions?
Well, I guess, yeah. I just want to make sure, I agree with you. I just want to be clear that we're interpreting this the same way, that our intention is really to get detailed answers to these questions, and that, you know, obviously you can figure out how to work with the consultant to make that happen. But I don't want, and I don't, you know, I don't want anyone, I want to encourage you to spend money that doesn't need to be spent on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't want you to be so concerned about holding on to that money that we don't get the detailed analysis in all the areas that we want in this law.
Exactly.
That's the shortest answer I've ever heard you give. That's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey. I think we don't have any more questions currently. We have gone over some of the Senator Anderson and I and some of the Humphreys have gone over some potential compromise language, and we wanted to distribute this and let people take a look at that, take a look at it.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson,
I appreciate this. This is language that comes from discussion from Representative Knuth and I, and it's a proposed compromise. It's not, we haven't had time on my side to really spend time with my conferees going through this in detail, so we need a little more time to go through it, but we wanted to put it out on the table for discussion purposes and for everyone to look at. So it's a proposal that I think gets us real close to where we think we want to be.
And just for House members, it's in your packet, so you already have a copy of this, and we've gone over this document pretty extensively. So again, this is proposed by the chairs, and I think we'll have some time to go through it, but we wanted to move this forward as quickly as we could, especially because the House and the side by side, once you start getting into it, is a little more confusing than it really needs to be, because we're actually pretty close.
Should we go through and sort of point out highlights?
And I think we're basically going to go through this working document, and what we to get at it, we basically took the Senate structure of the bill and inserted House language at key points and did a little bit to this, kind of some tweaks to the structure. So just starting out, I think the title is the way that title is in the Senate. And I think a major change is that we heard pretty clear that the intent language is not necessarily the content of the intent, but intent generally is not looked upon well in the Senate, and so in the House, we've suggested that we could live without that intent, despite the fact that I think it is important and would give the governor a better negotiating hand as we move forward in the rules, negotiating the model rules. So that's a big change. If you go through the Midwestern Greenhouse Gas Accord section, it's going to using the House language of the January 15th deadline, and we all understand bill deadlines and wanting to have the information we need to write our bills well and to advocate for them and make sure everyone's on the same page with a fairly complex issue. And adding into that report, the Senate language initially had just the economic impact study and the cap and trade potential revenue study was considered separately. They had the same due date, but one was to be included in this report back to the legislature, and one was just to come back to the legislature somehow. And I think the House felt very strongly that to get the clearest picture, most balanced picture possible, that these two studies needed to be considered together as we move forward in this process. So that's an important position from the House perspective. moving on to page two, we changed a little bit a way that the members are appointed from the House side to make it closer to the Senate side, and we stated that this advisory group that would be appointed must receive briefings instead of mayor requests, just to make sure that they are included in getting the information needed to offer advice.
And Madam Chair, I think you agreed to take out the other members that were
yes,
added.
That is a big point. And that we had an amendment in the House about including a couple more business and several labor leaders, and had some research done about how those people would be appointed and how their costs would be reimbursed per diem, cost to travel to meetings, those sorts of things. And really, and the time frame we're looking at, the appointment process was unclear and difficult to figure out how to make that happen by the June 1st deadline, which is in here for the appointing. And also, not sure exactly how their expenses would be paid. So it was an amendment that we wanted to talk about, and a little unclear about how to do it. We did take some House language, which broadens the advisory capacity to the various groups that are being appointed by the Midwest Governors Association. They have more than just a cap and trade group. They have an energy efficiency group and some other ones that I think it'd be important for legislators to be informed on.
Madam Chair?
Senator Frederickson?
I'm looking at this section now, being a member of the Senate, I'm a little paranoid because it looks like we have three members of the Senate and four of the House.
We do?
Three members of the majority party and one member of the minority. That's four, unless you want to adjust the number.
No, it's Senator Frederickson. It is supposed to be three members, two majority, one minority. Three members of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House, including one member of the minority party. So it's of those three, one is supposed to be a minority member.
Madam Chair, look at line 30. It says three members of the majority party of the House of Representatives and one member of the minority.
Senator Frederickson.
Somebody with dual
membership.
Maybe it could be.
I
don't have line
30 on the Well, it says, you mean line 29?
Do you mean line 29? I think you're
looking
at
you may
an
have
older
an old version that we gave you earlier today. There have been a couple of, that was corrected, I think.
So this is.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned that. We did give conferees a copy of this. Well, it was a work in progress. We made a couple of technical changes, and that was one of them, I believe. So.
Okay.
Senator Frederickson, I'd love to have four members of the House, since we have twice as many members as the Senate, but.
Oh,
I
no, you don't want to start down that road.
I'm not going to. So is that clear in the language now? Okay,
oh, good.
Paranoia is gone away.
Okay, and then moving forward, we did have the approved by the legislature. We've talked about this at length in many different places, and I think this is just a little clearer in terms of making sure the legislature is involved. And I think that's something we can all stand behind in terms of the intent. Section three, it combines the two studies. They're still two separate studies, but they're considered at the same level. And you can see it's again on January 15th. It's prepared by expert consultants. And we've already talked about how the arrangements are being done with the Midwestern Governors Association and their expert consultants. And we took some of the House language here because it brings into the economic impact study how potential revenues could be used to increase the benefits of a cap and trade program. And so that language the House felt was very important to have in the study. Line 31, we just made it clear that it was entities because facilities may not always be the way it's regulated. It's just a little more broad. On page three, lines 3 through 7, we did take the House language here because the Senate language assumed price increases just the way it was written, and so we tried to make that a little more neutral. And on lines 10 through 14, we took some of the House language to make sure steel and aluminum were included because we had just a slightly different list of particular industries. And then also, and this is important, I think in any cap and trade program at a regional or national level, of how you deal with imports and how mechanisms for addressing some of the greenhouse gas emission impacts of imports on their, where they were manufactured or produced, and then some of the transportation costs. And that's something I think a lot of people have been struggling with as we move forward in this, and I think it's important to include in our analysis so we have the best information we can get on that particular issue.
Madam Chair, it's been brought to my attention that we may not have an aluminum industry in Minnesota. I'm trying to remember where that came from, but we may not need to say aluminum.
Okay.
Is anyone aware of whether we have any aluminum production? Oh, Mike Robertson's shaking his head. No.
No. Okay.
We may want to delete that.
We could take out the word aluminum. But I do think, I'm assuming that we still want steel in there. There's
yes,
the people
absolutely.
Very concerned about that.
Yes.
Lines 15 to 17, we have energy cost savings, and we just put impacts on. It's trying to be more neutral. And then this is an amendment that went on in a committee, and it lines 20 to 21, an analysis of the effect of adopting a trade program on foreign and domestic investment to make sure that we could be getting some flowing out, but we could also be getting some newer industry. So kind of looking at it both ways. Subdivision 3 is in the House language. It was the potential cap and trade revenue study, and it's a different study, but one that should be considered very close with the economic impact. So it's just changing up that language a lot, or changing up that language a little bit. Page 4, section, or lines 4 through 6, again trying to make it more neutral, although I think we send a lot of our money to export our to buy our fossil fuels, so I don't know if there's any major fossil fuel sources coming from in online in Minnesota, so I think we can assume we'll be buying them
pretty much
somewhere
none.
Else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On line 11, the House language had windfall profits, which we've seen in Europe with some of that cap and trade, with the issues around their cap and trade programs, so we wanted to include that. And then,
Madam Chair, we had put the same concept into the wording unfair economic advantage, which we thought kind of captured the same idea, but I know the House felt strongly about those words. So.
Lines 12 through 15, the House felt that the evaluation of governance options for revenue distribution under Section 4, we have a whole other study for that, but we wanted to make sure we had the right criteria to make those decisions. So it's not necessarily power who governs it, but the issues and the criteria they use to how to determine any possible expenditures in this study. Moving on, it's taking the Senate language. We had an amendment on the floor about telecommuting tax credits. We compromised and said incentives instead of just tax credits, although, yeah, so we compromised for using incentives. We again added steel and aluminum. We could probably take out aluminum on that part, but keep the steel in. And then lines 30 to 31, it basically, this was another position of the House that we want to know in any potential revenues, we want to know about a scenario in which the majority of the expenditures are either directly rebated to consumers or families, individuals in Minnesota, and are also given as direct grants or incentives to make the transition to a lower carbon, more energy efficient economy. And then the study criteria, basically the same. The governance study, again, we're changing the date to make sure we can use the information well. And the appropriation, I know 1812 has the appropriation language. This is a little more specific, and I guess I would ask for staff help in terms of making sure we get that right and get it right with staff help. So that's the chairs kind of going through and trying to move us along in a compromise. And do you have any comments or questions about that?
Well, and Madam Chair, I think I think probably our intention would be to recess before we adopted this, unless everybody really wants us to vote and be done with it. But we haven't, you know, we can take a little bit of time to discuss it amongst the Senate members as well as amongst the House members, and I think that would be appropriate to recess after we, so if there's any discussion, just wanted to let people know that we intend to take a little time to absorb this.
Madam Chair, it's still not clear to me what's meant by approved by the legislature.
Okay.
I know what enacted law means, and that's enacting the law as a force of law to be imposed, but approved by the legislature just sort of like a good suggestion.
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, maybe this is a situation where we should take the best of both and say approved by the legislature and enacted into law. And not have to worry who's right, and just say we're both are.
That's a distinction without a difference.
It is. I think it's redundant, but...
I think the point is we want to make sure the legislature's involved, and it just, it's, I usually get frustrated with comfort language, but this in particular is some comfort language from the House perspective. Are there any other...
Madam Chair, just reading this line.
How about...
Cap and trade agreements entered into are not effective until, in Minnesota, until approved by the legislature, that won't make them effective. Enacted into law makes them effective.
Well, Madam Chair, how about Senator Anderson?
Enacted into law by the legislature.
I would be okay with that. Senator Frederickson, I just wanted to be very clear that the legislature does need to review this and see that it needs to go through the legislative process. And I think that's
Let me ask another question. Could they go into effect by executive level without the legislature?
Senator Frederickson, I can't answer that question. The reason I put this language forward is because I had comments in various meetings that there could be a scenario where the legislature would not have to act and this could go into effect. I felt that while it might not be easy to get through the legislature, I think for good government's sake, it's important that the legislature is involved.
And I'm not arguing that. I think the stronger role for the legislature would be the requirement to act enacted into law. Otherwise, they're just a good suggestion.
And Madam Chair, there is it seems to me that a departmental rule has the same impact as legislation without having to go through the legislative process. So I think this is asking that it goes. I doubt that would happen with this particular issue, Madam Chair, but I suppose it's an outside chance.
We like to make sure the legislature
is involved
in this.
Right.
Making this into law. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, I think the word, if I'm hearing you correctly, the word, it's not the only thing that's bothering you about it, but the word approved, because that's sort of vague and it's not legally, doesn't mean it's legally binding. And so maybe we can get the sense that the legislature has to pass a law. That's what we're talking about. I mean, I think we all agree on what we're talking about. We just want to be totally clear on how to say that in a way that is legal. Yeah. Maybe our staff can think about that. All right.
I don't think there's any, it doesn't look like there's any other comments. And so the question is, do we want to recess or come back later today or come back?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'd ask for us to recess at the call of the chair, and perhaps you and I could talk again in an hour or two and see where we're at.
Okay.
See if we think we're ready to close up the bill and vote, or that if we need more time or have questions or whatever, or major changes that people want to make.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Chair, we do have session at 3. I don't know how long it's going to hold.
We're in session.
So Madam Chair,
we'll recess the call of the chair, but there is a possibility that we could be coming back in the next day or two to vote on this, depending on what's happening in both bodies on the floor.
So if it's not today, Madam Chair, probably hopefully tomorrow.
Hopefully tomorrow. Yeah.
but we'll keep members informed.
Okay. Thank you. We met with at the committee's of the session.